With Cardinal World Series champ Brad Thompson and Chris Ronji, I'm Randy Carricker. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN in St. Louis. And now we go to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. And Mark Schanowski covered the 1990s Bulls for ABC 7 in Chicago and most recently covered the Bulls on NBC in Chicago. And he's with us now. Mark, thank you so much for taking some time today.
Guys, great to join you. Obviously, this has been the most popular thing going on in sports right now is The Last Dance.
Yeah, you aren't lying, and people were flocking to watch it. I'll be doing the same this weekend with millions of others. And I love being reminded of just the madness surrounding the Bulls at that time, the circus that it is. And it's almost exhausting even watching it. I want to know from your perspective, what was it like covering basically a traveling circus?
Well, one of the things that's really been interesting for me is seeing this unlimited access that was given to the film crew for the documentary, because the local stations got zero access. I mean, I remember going out to practice and practice would end and you'd go out to the court and there'd be nobody out there. Phil Jackson would come down maybe 45 minutes later after he was dragged by a media relations rep, and he would grudgingly give us a few minutes of his time with some coach speak. But the players just avoided local media like crazy. Michael Jordan, during the first three-peat, was fantastic. You could talk to him in front of his locker before games. He loved talking about anything going on in the world. It didn't just have to be about basketball. But by the time that second three-peat came around, and specifically the Last Dance season of 97-98, those guys were totally burned out with the media coverage, and it was very difficult for local stations to get anything remotely interesting.
Well, if you go from the mid-80s to, you know, what they were in the mid-80s and how they were an afterthought in the city as far as all the sports teams go, and then just a handful of years later, Michael shows up, and then they become good, and the entire scene changed. Do you remember that transition of them being, you know, just a team that nobody really cared about all that much, and then the next thing you know, they're the hottest ticket in town?
Well, I came to Chicago in April of 1990, so I jumped on right when they were ready to take off. Matter of fact, my first assignments was to go to the Palace for the famous Scottie Pippen migraine headache game when they lost in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And at that point, there was still some concern that, yeah, the Bulls are great and Jordan is the premier scorer in the league, but do they have enough to get past the teams they need to beat in the Eastern Conference and then ultimately to win a championship? And the next year, they would sweep the Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals with the famous Isaiah Thomas and company skulking off and refusing to shake hands, and then they beat the Lakers in five, and then they were off and running. But, you know, the 80s, we saw in the first couple episodes of the documentary, we made the joke of drug use within the team and within the league, and they were a mess. And Michael came into that situation in 1984, a guy that wanted to, you know, eat, drink, and sleep basketball, and then he found out that none of his teammates were that well invested in it. I'm sure it was quite a shock to the system for Michael, and then it was a question of getting some of the dead weight off that roster and bringing in guys who could contribute like they did with Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant in the 1987 draft.
Mark Schanowski with us on 101 ESPN. And Mark, obviously it was a spectacular eight-year run. You had the 2 years where Michael essentially was gone. He came back for a half year in 95. But I want to go back to the greatest show on turf here. Mike Martz always said to us in the media and said to the fans through us, hey, savor this because it's a special place and time. As you were going through it and covering it, did you appreciate it as much as you do now?
I can't say that I really was aware of what was going on at every moment. There were times where you were frustrated as a member of the media, as I mentioned earlier, about mm-hmm. the lack of access, and you're wondering, you know, this team is so great, but we aren't really able to tell the stories that we'd like to bring to our viewers. But there were times where you would just be at a game on a Tuesday night, and they're playing New Jersey or some other bad team, and Jordan would go flying through the air with a reverse alley-oop dunk and just bring you to your feet almost. I mean, obviously no cheering in the press box,
right.
But, you know, you're thinking inside that I'm really lucky to be able to get to watch really one of the most spectacular athletes the world has ever seen and to do it on a regular basis. And there were games, you know, the thing that Michael really took pride in was he wanted to play every game, exhibitions included, because back then they would take the exhibition circuit to a lot of smaller markets, and he always said that this might be the only chance that a family in Peoria or somewhere else will get a chance to watch me in person, so I'm going to play, and I'm going to play as hard as I can. And the change in attitudes now with the load management and guys taking off multiple games during the regular season, it was a different era back then, and Jordan took great pride in trying to play every game. I mean, in the last season, he played all 82 games at the age of 35, which is pretty remarkable, and led the league in scoring, was the MVP, and showed no signs of wearing down, even though he had been in the league for as long as he had. So it was a different time. It was fun to watch. You never knew what you would see on a given night, and that's what made it so exciting to cover the team.
The very first game ever played, the very first event ever at what is now Enterprise Center in St. Louis, then it was Kiel Center, was a Bulls preseason game. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it was October of 1994, and he wasn't playing then, but it would have been great to have him here. But like you say, everybody that didn't have an NBA team would have killed to have the opportunity to see Jordan even in a preseason game.
Yeah, when you think back to what Michael Jordan became, he was a worldwide phenomenon. I mean, he went to Barcelona with the Dream Team in 92, and people just lined up just to be able to get a chance to get a look at him. You know, you think about all the big celebrities in the world, and Michael just ranked right up there with all of those guys. And I think that was one of the reasons why he stepped away from the game. Of course, you know, you hear all the conspiracy theories involving gambling and all kinds of other reasons, but I think basically he was just so burned out from carrying that team to the first three titles and all the media attention. He was becoming such a worldwide phenomenon that I think it was almost too much to take. And probably the humbling experience of riding the buses and playing minor league baseball and experiencing failure, really, as an athlete for the first time, really reinvigorated him and gave him that motivation to come back and try to take another run for championships and add three more to his total.
Yeah, most of us get that failure thing figured out a little bit quicker. It took
Michael
a little while. Understandable. Hey, what I love about this series, and first of all, I mean, it's sports at this point. It's given us a look that we've never seen before. But I like the fact that it's going to be 10 episodes, and we're going to learn more and more about kind of every aspect here of this team. And it seems like we're going to learn a bit about Dennis Rodman in the third episode. What was your experience covering Dennis like? Because that's a unique character right there.
Yeah, unique is the perfect word for him, and you've already heard in the first couple of episodes where some of his teammates talked about the fact that, you know, when it came to basketball, there was not a whole lot of interaction. They didn't have to say much to him. Once he got on the court, he was a very smart basketball player, high basketball IQ, and he knew where he was supposed to be in terms of their defensive rotations, their offensive plays. He made the right decisions with the ball. Just a really smart basketball player, and they really didn't have to worry about him. It was just a question of what he would do in his free time. Could they get him to practice and the games in one piece? Because they knew that once he took the court, he was going to be fine. From a media perspective, you know, he was almost painfully shy unless he was going to have one of his outlandish ceremonies where he'd, you know, put a wedding dress on to try to promote a book or something else. But on a day-to-day basis, you rarely saw him. You know, he did his work in the weight room after practice. Very rarely did interviews on practice days or game day shoot-arounds. And the only way you could get him after a game was you'd have to wait maybe an hour after the game was over, after everybody else had done their media responsibilities, got dressed and left. He would try to sneak out a back door where they were doing the laundry and try to go a different route to get to his car, and the media would line up with all the cameras, and we would literally do the perp walk where we're trying to walk backwards and stumble over each other trying to get some kind of sound. And basically it was useless because he would just chuckle and then mumble a few things. You were getting basically nothing you could use on TV, but we almost felt we had to do it because you didn't want to not be there the one day that Dennis was going to say something outrageous.
So in having already watched the first couple of episodes of this thing, and we saw how Jerry Krause has been portrayed in it so far, and being in Chicago for as long as you have, that he's not really the most popular guy, and even in death he's still not very popular. Are the criticisms of him and the way he was at least portrayed in the first couple of episodes, to you, are they accurate?
They're very accurate. You know, his nickname was the Sleuth, and he liked to live up to that. He would sneak into gyms and try to be unnoticed, which was pretty hard for a guy with his physical description to sneak into a college arena and feel like no one's going to notice that he's there. But he took great pride. You know, back in those days, you could find a guy like Scottie Pippen in Central Arkansas or a Tony Kukoc who was playing in Yugoslavia when he was a teenager, and maybe you could get the jump on some other executives. Nowadays, that doesn't happen because scouting is worldwide, and you can get video on guys from anywhere on the planet almost instantly. But back then, Krause took great pride in being a little bit smarter than his fellow executives. Very secretive. I remember that he'd make himself available before the draft, and then you'd spend 10 minutes getting non-answers to every question you could think of. Just basically, well, he's a good player, and he's on our board. and that's about all he would say about any athlete. But in terms of his interpersonal relationships, a lot has come out over the last week or so. The former Bulls coach Tim Floyd has kind of made the media circuit talking about the fact that he was approached to coach the team after the 72-win season, which is just confounding to think that an organization coming off a record-setting season would actually consider replacing its head coach. But that was the ego that Jerry Krause had. He thought he could tear it down and he could immediately rebuild another championship team because he was smarter than everybody else. He did some great things along the way in bringing in complimentary pieces for Michael and Scotty, but his ego got the best of him, and that's what ultimately led to them running Phil out and then seeing everybody else go along with him after that 98 season.
You mentioned his nickname, the Sleuth. Were people aware that he was also being called Crumbs?
Oh, yeah. That was
okay.
That was well known because, as you've seen in the first couple of episodes, Michael didn't really care who happened to notice him. He knew that film crew was there, and he ran down Jerry a couple of times, you know, making references to his inability to do anything of a physical nature. And I'm sure as we see the last eight episodes, you're going to see a lot more instances of Michael and Scotty, probably those two mostly, looking for any opportunity to embarrass Jerry in front of the team. It just became so contentious, and it wasn't just Jerry Krause. I mean, Michael was unhappy that he was underpaid throughout his career. Scotty was always unhappy, always complaining about his contract, always had a beef or perceived slight, even though at that time there was no way they really could renegotiate the long-term contract he signed because of salary cap rules. So there were a lot of guys grumbling for different reasons, and most of their unhappiness was taken out on Jerry Krause because, let's face it, he was a pretty easy target, and he was always around the team. It's not like now where general managers are rarely seen on team planes and team buses. Krause was everywhere, and it just irritated the players to no end.
Mark Schanowski, great information. Thanks so much for taking some time with us today, and have a great weekend and enjoy the show on Sunday night.
Yeah, always great to catch up with Chris Ranji. Chris had the patience of a saint when he was doing White Sox postgame shows here. I remember listening to some of the most ridiculous questions you could ever imagine, but he took them all in good stride, and he came up with some creative responses to put some of the listeners in his place. So Chris always will have a warm spot in Chicago media.
Love it.
Well, I'm very happy about that, Mark. I got to see all of four playoff games in 10 years. It was great.
Right.
I
but
said
you handled
games.
Those callers expertly, Chris.
Yeah, thank you very much. And by the way, when I said games, not playoff series, I saw four
right.
playoff games in a decade.
Hey, well, it's going to be a new era of White Sox baseball. Maybe we can get you back here sometime.
Or I'll be glad to come watch. Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Mark Schanowski with us on 101 ESPN. He covered the Bulls for ABC C7 in Chicago during that great run in the 90s. Next up, Neat's going to take a look at the Twitter machine and tell us what's trending on 101 ESPN.